Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point.
Kentucky Derby. Cole Coleman breaking alertly from that inside post. Bob Blackjack has some good early speed as well. Big Brown is there on the far outside. Eight Bells forwardly placed. And here's that stampede bias for the first time. And
the Kentucky Derby, the biggest race of all, last Saturday and sound there from what turned out to be the last minutes of three-year-old filly Eight Bells' life. Big Brown won. The cameras cut away. Eight Bells died.
What is the report on 8 Bells?
Unfortunately, she broke both front ankles and collapsed, lost support to both of them, and so they immediately euthanized her because there was no possible way to save her.
It was hardly the first time. Race fans know the list of great thoroughbreds that have raced and died. Prairie Bayou, Ruffian, Gopher Wand, Barbaro, and many less famous horses. Now, some critics are saying, enough, this is cruel. Supporters say it's in the nature of the breed. This hour, On Point, 8 Bells' death and the controversy over thoroughbred horse racing. In this hour, we will hear the perspectives of breeder, vet, humane society, and of course, you. Did you watch the Kentucky Derby? How did you feel when the strapping three-year-old 8 Bells collapsed and within minutes was put down? Is horse racing good for horses? Can it be made safer or not? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Joining me first today from New York is Sally Jenkins, sports columnist and feature writer for The Washington Post. She wrote a column titled, Is Horse Racing Breeding Itself to Death? For last Sunday's paper. Sally, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi there. Thank you for having me.
It's a tough question that you ask. How do you answer it?
Well, I think the answer is yes. I think that I've heard from a lot of breeders, actually, since that column ran, who are talking about how they're reappraising the way they work in their business. You know, it's not a business that's easily regulated. It's a fairly shadowy business to the rest of us. But it's going to take some conscience on the part of breeders to start breeding for strength and for stamina as opposed to pure, early, maturing speed, which is what buyers have been paying the highest prices for in the last 15, 20 years.
Describe that breeding for us, Sally. Where has it taken thoroughbreds? What's going on?
American thoroughbreds are basically bred from three basic lines of stallions. The interesting thing about 8 Bells is that she comes from, her grandsire was a horse named Northern Dancer, a great horse, but one who apparently has bred some vulnerability into the line. Unbridled Song was her sire who had some foot problems. There's some discussion inside breeding, and Jim Squires would be much better at talking about this than I am.
And we'll hear from Jim in just a moment.
But as I understand it, I'm not an expert on this subject by any means, but as I understand it, there are some lines that are considered more vulnerable than others, but they do produce early maturing, big, derby-style horses who show early bursts of speed and therefore can get you to a Kentucky Derby, but they may not have much stamina or longevity.
1,500 pounds, maybe?
1,200. Eight Bells was a huge horse. She was a very large horse. She was not, a fragile filly. A lot of people say, well, was it because she was a filly? And I would just point out that, first of all, she was an incredibly large horse, very large, strong, powerful horse, as she demonstrated on the track. And fillies race with colts all the time, and this doesn't happen. I think it has more to do possibly with breeding or with the possibility that she was injured and already and slightly and someone didn't know it.
Sally, you wrote on Sunday that thoroughbred racing is in a, quoting you here, is in a moral crisis, and everyone knows it. For years, defenders have said, well, we've got some problems, but this is what horses do. They run, they race, and sometimes they get hurt. You say there's a moral crisis.
And that's true enough, but I think most people who tell the truth, and the responsible people in thoroughbred racing do tell the truth, would tell you that there have been some nagging problems in this sport for a very long time. In European racing, they don't drug the horses. In European racing, they wait for horses to mature. In other types of horse oriented sports, they wait for the horses to mature much longer. These horses start racing at the age of two, and I have never met a trainer in the business who tells you that's a good thing for a horse.
Now, you're saying in Europe they don't drug the horses. Are you saying in the United States they do? With what kind of drugs and why?
They permit medications, and not all drugs are bad for horses. Let me start by saying that. These are medicines, not necessarily performance-enhancing drugs. But American thoroughbred racing allows a level of drug use and a level of medication that's not allowed in other thoroughbred racing.
And then we come to moral crisis. What are you saying here? There have been calls to...
What I'm saying is that these drugs can mask potential injuries, that these drugs allow trainers to put horses back on the track when if they did not have these medications and were not allowed to use them, or had to wait if there was a mandatory waiting period if a horse does have to be medicated. Maybe the thing to do is to have a rule that there has to be, the horse has to take a month off before it can get back on the track if it's had to be medicated. There are lots of very reasonable rules like that that could be considered inside this sport and should have been considered before now.
Bill Roden at the New York Times wrote, you were very moving. He was very tough. He said, this sport, horse racing, thoroughbreds, is at least as inhumane as greyhound racing, only a couple of steps removed from animal fighting. Animal fighting gets us into Michael Vick territory and, dog fighting, cock fighting.
I like Bill Roden very much. I like his work and respect him. I disagree with him on this. Thoroughbred racing, there are a lot of great, wonderful, decent owners and trainers and people inside thoroughbred racing who would tell you they feel a sense of deep partnership with the horses. They don't view it as abusive. I don't view it as abusive, but I do view it as a sport badly in need of three or four fundamental reforms.
And just spell those out for us. What would you make them?
I think they need to look hard. They're doing some good research now about whether or not synthetic tracks might be easier and prevent catastrophic injuries to horses. There's a what they call a poly track versus the hard dirt track that Churchill Downs was had.
And some of those are already out there in California and elsewhere.
Correct. And California has seen, the California tracks are reporting significant reductions in catastrophic injuries to the horses.
Okay, there's one.
The other one is perhaps they should move the age limit. Perhaps they should not, maybe this race should be for four-year-olds and not for three-year-olds. That's something that a lot of people are willing to consider. I don't know a trainer who thinks that the Triple Crown schedule is a good thing for horses. The Preakness is 2 weeks after the Kentucky Derby. That's a very tough order for a young racehorse.
And then, Sally, you say it's unfortunate that NBC chose to cut away from the breakdown of Eight Bells and not show that. You say because we need a hard look at the real cost to the horses. Do you mean it? Would you keep the cameras on through all that suffering?
I'm not advocating a long, lingering look at the horse suffering. What I am saying is that I found NBC's coverage not balanced. I found that they dwelled on Big Brown's victory. You got a fleeting shot of a horse down on the track. You knew it was Eight Bells. You didn't know what was going on. Even once you got the report that she was terribly injured and being euthanized, they really, the rest of the telecast, there were long minutes of, celebrating by the Big Brown party and discussion from racetrack officials about what a great derby it had been. You know, personally as a viewer and as a race fan, I found it deeply offensive that they were celebrating one horse's victory while another one was dying, literally right over there.
Sally Jenkins, sports columnist for The Washington Post. The headline on her Sunday piece was, Is Horse Racing Breeding Itself to Death? Sally, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Joining us now from Lexington, Kentucky, and we're very glad to have him, is Jim Squires. He's a thoroughbred horse, racehorse breeder. His horse, Monarchos, won the 2001 Kentucky Derby. He's a former member of the Kentucky Racing Commission and owns Two Bucks Farm, manages Two Bucks Stables in Versailles, Kentucky. He's author of Horse of a Different Color, A Tale of Breeding Geniuses, Dominant Females, and the Fastest Derby Winner Since Secretariat. He's former editor of the Chicago Tribune. Jim Squires, thank you very much for joining us.
Hi, Tom. I'm delighted to be here.
You've just written in a column of your own, appeared in the New York Times, if human athletes, you said, were euthanized on television every time one broke a leg or neck in an accident, the NFL, NASCAR, and Olympic skiing would be out of business. You say, unless thoroughbred racing stops demoralizing TV audiences with tragic endings, it will slide into further oblivion. Is that where we're headed, Jim?
Well, that paragraph really reflects the concern of the industry itself about a lot of complex issues and multifaceted issues mm-hmm. that it must deal with. I tend to look at it as a lifelong horse lover because I have been riding them and breeding them and foaling them for many, many years. And at the same time, I was a journalist who looks at issues, and I'm a born reformer, I think. Mm. So I'm always looking for a better way to do things, and there are better ways to do things. Most of the people in my industry don't see much use in talking about these things because our critics are so angry and it's generally oversimplified. There certainly what happened at Churchill Downs. Yeah, it could not be more abhorred by anyone than by those of us who breed and raise horses. And certainly there's been blame aimed at various people, the trainer, the jockey, the track, the race itself. I'm a big fan of Sally Jenkins, and she's a very good columnist, and I agree with almost everything she said, but her column left the idea that this is some kind of Roman circus and all the rich people in the world are out there with julep-sipping women who we're going to watch the lions eat the Christians. Mm. This is a terrible thing for the Kentucky Derby. It's the first time it ever happened in the Derby. It happens just strangely when we have these things on television where we have a chance to showcase what is really an important industry filled with very good people.
And not for the first
time.
Who
are horse lovers.
We remember, Barbara, we've got to take a short break here. Jim Squires, please stand by. Here's more sound from that Kentucky Derby just this past weekend. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
His third tail of the county is right, and the final furlong of the Kentucky Derby, and it's going to be Big Brown bounding home to a convincing win and the run for the roses. It is Big Brown by five on the wire. The filly 8 miles was second. Dennis of Cork came from 20th to be third under the line. And Tail of the Cotty was fourth. There's the Derby winner, Big Brown, and he delivered today.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking today about the death of three-year-old filly 8 Bells on the track at the Kentucky Derby and what some are calling the moral crisis of thoroughbred horse racing. Jim Squires is with us, a thoroughbred breeder himself. His horse, Monarchos, won the 2001 Kentucky Derby, former editor of the Chicago Tribune, very prominent, been on the Kentucky Racing Commission, and knows the track and the world behind it very well. We will hear voices from the Humane Society of this country. We'll hear John Stick, veterinarian, later in this hour. You can join the conversation as well. Horse racing fans, what do you make of this? How do you defend your sport with 8 Bells down and the world up in arms in many corners? Everybody, did you watch the Derby? Did you see 8 Bells go down? Were you there? Were you at the track? Can you imagine that heroic effort? Then two snapped ankles and the great horse dead right there at Churchill Downs. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Here's the horse's trainer, Larry Jones, talking about how jockey Gabriel Saez rode 8 Bells, whip in hand, of course, during the Kentucky Derby.
He hit her a few times, but like any jockey would, she responded well, and she finished full of run, and she just needs to go down when the thought of glory instead of something that has been abusive.
Finished full of glory and minutes later was dead. Jim Squires, take us to that. You're a horse guy through and through. There will be many who don't really understand what went on in those last seconds of this race. I wish you'd just take us into that final stretch where Big Brown was, where 8 Bells was, what happened with her, and then the aftermath.
Well, you know, the what happened is what we really ought to spend some time on, and I don't think we can do that. But I will tell you that Gabriel Saez was not beating on his horse any harder than anyone else was. He just happened to be one of the few. There were only three horses still running at the end of this race. Generally at the Derby, most horses pack it in at about a mile and an eighth, and you only have two or three left running. In this case, it happened to be the filly and Big Brown, and one other horse was kind of coming down the rail, not being hit, but that's just the jockey style of riding. Calvin Burrell's riding a horse coming down the rail. He won the Derby last year without much whipping.
And the whole thing so fast, just 2 minutes, 1.82 seconds. I mean, this whole thing is over in a hurry. These horses are flying, and Eight Bells.
Well, let me just tell you, that was not a very fast Derby. That's one of the things we need to deal with is speed. And speed is a problem in horse racing, but it's early speed at an early age, which threatens the skeletal system of the young horses. That Derby was two seconds slower than Secretariat ran. He was a very big, mature horse, and Monarcos 2 seconds slower than Monarcos ran, and he was a young a small horse, but mature and older than the other horses in the race. So that's the problem with all the generalizations, is that how the horse was raised, how it was bred, as Sally pointed out, and how it was trained, all of those things have impact on these accidents. And I'll tell you about Eight Bells.
Please.
I have horses with Larry Jones, and I have them with Larry Jones.
Eight Bells trainer.
He's a wonderfully humane trainer. And people like me like to have trainers like Larry Jones. I also know the people who bred this horse. This horse came off of one of the best farms in Kentucky, run by people who raise horses like I do, Three Chimneys. So I doubt very seriously that Eight Bells ever suffered any steroid abuse or was running on any kind of drugs. And if there is a criticism of her, it might have been that just because horses are big and look mature, that actually suggests to me and to breeders like myself that maybe it is the fast growth that's the problem. She was a big filly, but she was not a filly that showed the results of steroids. She was not a heavily muscled, bustling kind of horse.
But they do have to get in there early, Jim, because the Triple Crown requires it. If you want to compete in here, you can't wait around forever. You've got to get out there and race.
Well, that's right, but you don't want to give them what I'm driving at is that there's no evidence or suggestion here that there was growth hormones involved with this horse or steroids. She did not look like a steroid horse to me, and I know what a steroid horse looks like.
Eight Bells died in the track.
She looked like a horse that had a terrible accident, probably caused by overexertion, being tired at the end, and a bad step. The point being that you can change the track. You can have a perfectly bred horse. You can have one with a trainer who's humane and uses no drugs. And under this kind of this exertion and this adrenaline rush that occurs in a horse competition, a horse can overtire, which is one of the reasons horses break down, or simply take a bad step. They put the horse foot down in a place that they didn't intend for it to come down. And when you do, you have 1,100 pounds going on some very thin bones. And that takes us to the breeding. I think Sally was right on target about her headline on her column was, "Are we breeding ourselves to death?" And actually, we don't race our horses nearly as hard as we used to. We don't have any really hard evidence there that there are any more catastrophic breakdowns than there used to be.
She points out 1.5 out of every 1,000 races.
Back then. Mm-hmm. Pardon?
1.5 out of every 1,000 races.
Well, now, that's not a catastrophic breakdown. That number, which is being thrown around, is a career-ending injury. That doesn't mean the horse was euthanized every 1.5 out of every 1,000. That's 1.5 out of every 1,000 starts. A horse might hurt himself and not be able to run anymore. Some of those injuries can be on the poly track, which is generally have more soft tissue injuries. Mm-hmm. So it's that kind of perspective that we need to put all this in.
Jim, may I ask you, I grew up with horses, but on a farm, just rough and ready farm horses, by no means thoroughbreds. And I know when they foundered or got in trouble, I know how we put them down, but I don't know how a horse is put down at a Triple Crown race. I mean, just for our listeners is it a shot?
Yeah, it's a shot. It's an injection. I mean, it is as humane as putting down can be. I mean, it is a quick injection of a of a overdose of painkiller, basically.
Let's take a couple of calls, if we may, and then we're going to turn to Wayne Pacelli with the Humane Society, who has some strong views on what's going on in horse racing. We've got Kat on the line from Pocatello, Idaho. Hi, Kat. You're on the air with Jim Squires.
Hello.
Hi. What do you know, Kat?
I am a horse owner. I have owned thoroughbreds, and I've ridden thoroughbreds. I believe that what Sally Jenkins said is right on the mark. I believe we're breeding for speed rather than soundness, and you put money and horses together, and you got a problem. I have had a business with horses, but I think that we need to put uniform track down wherever these horses run. They're running on the same kind of track no matter where they go. It makes a lot of difference, and it's hard sometimes for horses to adjust. There's been such great improvement with the poly track. I think there shouldn't be any option. I think the horse racing industry, if it's going to survive, has got to put more back into the horses themselves. We do find a lot out about their care, but the injury rate, the mortality rate is way out there, and it's very, very sad.
Kat, let me ask you. You say you put horses and money together, you've got trouble, but that's what horse racing is, horses and money together. So are you for it? Would you keep it going, or are you saying something else?
I think we need to put the money back into helping to take care of the horses, to make them last longer, to make them more comfortable and perhaps not so prone to these injuries. It used to be we could recycle more thoroughbreds for hunters and jumpers, and often there's just nothing left after they leave the track. Mm. And that's really sad, because whatever horse doesn't race and doesn't race successfully, if you look into that, what happens to all those horses? Mm. And there's a lot of them.
Kat in Idaho, thank you very much for your call. Let's get one more right here from Horse Country, Lexington, Kentucky. We've got Martin on the line. Hi, Martin. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Okay.
Hello?
Yes, we're right here, Martin.
Okay. I'm a Lexington, Kentucky implant, and I'm right in the midst of horse country. I have a big moral, it's a moral thing to me. The last caller, where she said, when you put horses and money together, it's really repulsive to me. I don't have any issue with horses liking to run and being pets like our dogs.
And horses do love to run. Anybody who knows horses knows they love to run, for heaven's sake.
Surely. But I see from living here that it's that equation. You run fast, you live well. In fact, horses here in Kentucky, there's a little saying here, the horses live better than the people. But that's on the contingency of how fast they run and how many races they win. Now, I did watch the Kentucky Derby. I'm not a horse racing fan at all, but I watched it just for me living here. And when the horse broke her ankle, they call it putting down. That's not. I don't call that putting it down. It was of no monetary value anymore to anybody. So you kill it, and I call it killing.
But a horse with two broken front ankles, what is that? That horse can't really survive.
If a human breaks two front ankles, we don't kill it. It is a moral, to me, it's a moral thing. And incidentally, if the horse had won the accolades that come along with it, as long as it does that, it can win the Triple Crown and be the fastest horse in the universe, but it breaks an ankle or breaks a leg or breaks two ankles, and you kill it. And what? I just have a big, but I love living here, and I love to see the horses graze, it's amazing seeing them run around with their new followings.
They are beautiful animals, Martin, in Lexington, Kentucky. We thank you for your call. Jim, I want to get you on that, but let me first bring in Wayne Pacelli. He's been waiting patiently here in Washington, president and CEO of the Humane Society, and a pretty tough critic of thoroughbred horse racing. Wayne, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks, Tom.
So how do you see it? I mean, you're out there famously protecting dogs and cats and all kinds of animals. Do you see horse racing on its face as animal cruelty, a legitimate sport, something in between? How do you read it, Wayne?
Right. Well, Tom, we are at the Humane Society of the United States known for protecting dogs and cats, but also wildlife and other creatures. And I would say in terms of spectator sports involving animals, horse racing, not only for the Humane Society of the United States, but for almost all other animal protection organizations, has always been on the low side in terms of attention. Dogfighting and cockfighting have attracted the most attention as a spectator sport. Bullfighting, of course, rodeo and greyhound racing in terms of racing sports has the ire of animal advocates.
But are you putting this in the same category as bullfighting, dog fighting, cockfighting?
No, Tom, I was just explaining that there are a number of spectator sports involving animals and that precisely the case that there is a difference in that these other activities have attracted the attention of animal welfare organizations and not so much horse racing. For instance, it is a pretty orthodox position of animal protection organizations to be against greyhound racing because of many of the inherent abuses in that industry. Certainly all animal organizations that have any salt are against dogfighting and cockfighting, but few organizations campaign at all against horse racing. And we at the Humane Society of the United States are not against horse racing, and we don't actively campaign against it. We do see these eruptions of concern when there's a tragic incident, and it seems like, obviously, with Barbaro 2 years ago and now with this
latest incident at
the Preakness,
or after.
We're getting more attention. But you know, I think this is happening in a cultural context where we're more and more concerned about animals. As we have more and more laws to make animal cruelty a felony, as we have strong laws against animal fighting, as greyhound racing is banned in state after state, you know, our moral attention turns to the question of horse racing, and there are a number of issues. Clearly, our role in this is more a reform orientation rather than an abolition effort, and there have been historic concerns. I wrote a story about horse racing 20 years ago. I just reviewed it this morning in anticipation of your show, Tom.
Yeah.
And the same issues that I drew out in that story are still present today. And one of the biggest problems is there are no good watchdog groups for the industry. Industry controlled.
But you're threatening to maybe become that right now. You've written just recently, it's up to the industry, deal with your problems, or animal advocacy groups and others not all that interested in horse racing will be forced to weigh in. Jim Squires, what about it? There was Barbaro, of course, famously at the Preakness, now Eight Bells. Are you concerned as somebody right in the middle of the industry that if it doesn't take some steps inside, there may be new pressure, threats to the industry, to horse racing itself from outside?
Well, the pressure, we talked about economics earlier. Horse racing is a $27, $28 billion economic sector in the country, and they provide a lot of jobs. Not everybody, in fact, very few people in the thoroughbred industry make any money. It's generally filled with horse lovers, and all of us are concerned about the economic future of the business and also the welfare of the horse, because there's so many horses, not only from the thoroughbred industry, but from all other breeds that are becoming surplus and useless, affected by drought and a lot of other things. So there's a tremendous amount of concern within the industry about the economic future. And certainly when we have practices and accidents, catastrophic ones like Barbaro and Eight Bells, we drive away owners, we drive away our fan support. But our biggest problem, and it's important in a civil conversation like this to get this point out, we don't have the same kind of industry that NASCAR does or that pro football does, in that we are not a private enterprise with ruling bodies that can enforce uniform rules and make things happen.
Do you need one, such a body?
Probably the most diverse and multifaceted sports in the world. And
One second, Jim, I just want to be clear on this. Are you saying that the horse racing industry needs such a body at this point?
Well, I think the horse racing needs to deal with its political problems, not only internal politics between the conflicting interests within the industry, but probably just as important, the fact that we are the only sport that has pari-mutuel gambling connected with us, and therefore we are heavily regulated by 50 different state jurisdictions and the federal government to one level or another, varying levels. In fact, widely diverse and problematic levels, in that we have a hard time getting anything uniform because we need to get 50 state legislatures and the federal government all to agree to it before we can get it done. And if that's not a problem enough, we have so many different groups with so many different interests that people who try to do things uniformly and have rules. I mean, we all would like to have the same racing surface, the same drug rules.
Jim, please hold that thought. I want to look at those when we come back from a short break here. And Wayne Pacelli with the Humane Society of the United States, please stand by. This is from 06, Preakness Stakes. Barbaro, of course, went down early and ended up, months later, euthanized out of this race. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
It is going to be Bernardini. Bernardini to win this Preakness, a bittersweet Preakness it was, a six-length win over Sweet Northern Saint, followed by Hemingway's Key and Brother Derek as they all pass the stricken Brother Derek, Barbaro, I should say. The final time was tepid, 154-3.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the death of three-year-old filly Eight Bells on the track at the Kentucky Derby and what some are calling the moral crisis of the thoroughbred horse racing industry. You can join the conversation in this hour. What do you think? For all its beauty, has thoroughbred horse racing somehow become inhumane? Have horses been so relentlessly bred for speed and power that they're now dying for our entertainment? Is our horror at Eight Bells' death just a sign that we're out of touch with how common injury and death is for horses, even in the wild, or something else going on here? We're at 1-800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. We've been joined by Jim Squires, a big breeder of horses himself, former member of the Kentucky Racing Commission, former editor of the Chicago Tribune, and author of Horse of a Different Color, and by Wayne Pacelli, president and CEO of the Humane Society of the United States. And Wayne, I want to get to you in just one second here, but let's get at least one call. So many callers want to join us from Chesapeake, Virginia. Susan's on the line. Hi, Susan. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Thanks for my call.
Mm-hmm.
I grew up in San Diego. I used to go to the track. Del Mar was my mother. I was born loving horses. What happened to Barbaro several years ago broke my heart. And this past Saturday, I was watching the races prior to the Derby, and then I got sidetracked. Didn't see the Derby, and when I saw the news on Sunday or Monday, I just couldn't believe what I was hearing, that it had happened again. Now, I have mixed emotions regarding racing now. Yes, horses are bred to run. I mean, that's in their blood, but we're pushing them. There needs to be regulation across the board in all 50 states. There needs to be a change in turf all across the board. And my question is, there is a breeding problem. Is there any more being done as far as medical? Are these ankles being x-rayed before races? Was there a whatever it is done when somebody dies? Autopsy. What happened to her? Did they find out what caused her ankles to break?
Susan, we will get an answer for you. Jim, I want to ask you on that, and I'll come to you in just a moment. And we've got a veterinarian about to join us, an equine surgeon. But Wayne Pacelli, first to you.
Thank you,
hear
Tom.
Susan, a horse lover and grew up at the races, and she said, you know, it's in their blood, yes, but we're pushing them. Jim Squire says it's a political problem that the industry has. Is that how you see it, or is it a cruelty problem?
Well, I see the industry always thinking about economics and about politics, and those are obvious concerns that the industry must be concerned about for it to be an industry. But animal welfare has been lower on the totem pole, and as I was saying earlier, I wrote a story 20 years ago. All of the same issues are at hand. There's no third-party watchdog that is pushing this industry, unfortunately. The industry is failing in terms of self-regulation. We're really the only industrialized nation that has horse racing that still has this rampant use of drugs to mask injuries, to allow injured horses to run. This early age racing is a problem. The overbreed, you know, one issue we're talking about, you know, horses dying, it's very dramatic on the track. It is relatively rare, although you've mentioned two in every 1,000 animals out of the gate suffers an industry and can't race any longer. But the bigger issue is the overbreeding. What's happening to these horses that are discarded? Some estimates are about 19,000 thoroughbreds go into the horse slaughter industry every year. If you're talking about, you know, a limited number dying on the track, you're talking about a much larger number being sent in inhumane transport conditions to slaughter plants. So horses are consumed in France, Belgium, or Japan. We're talking about breeding for speed. You know,
consumed, you mean eaten?
Consumed, yes. We don't eat horses in America, but horses are consumed in Belgium, mm-hmm. Japan, France, even Italy.
But Jim Squire says, you know, because betting is involved, there's government oversight all over the place. Are you saying that's not enough?
No, it's too insular, and the range of debate and discussion within the horse industry is too narrow. The basics like the early age racing. I mean, putting out 2 year olds so they can get ready for a 3 year old before their musculoskeletal systems are developed is a prescription for problems. Mm. The easy solution is to race them at a later age when they're more physically mature. The drugging issue is so obvious, and some states like New York have very strict rules. Other states like Kentucky through the years have been very permissive about this. They've been tightening it a bit lately. But many other states have very permissive rules to allow injured horses to run and also performance-enhancing drugs to be given to horses. This is unacceptable, and the horse racing industry itself needs to address this. And my point in my column yesterday in the San Francisco Chronicle was that the industry has gotten a free pass. I mean, there has not been a group really dogging and monitoring the industry. You have eruptions of concern if there's a major event.
Wayne, hold that thought right there if you'd be good enough. And Jim Squires, I promised to come to you on those points and that one in particular. But I've got a guest standing by here in East Lansing, Michigan, John Stick, equine surgeon, chief of staff at the Veterinary Teaching Hospital at Michigan State University, also runs the Michigan affiliate of the Racehorse Rehabilitation Group called CANTER. John Stick, thank you very much for being with us.
Hello, Tom.
First, to our caller's question, she said, what exactly happened with these ankles of 8 bells? Was there an autopsy? What's known about what happened on the track at the Kentucky Derby, John?
I think this is going to remain a question for a while. Everyone's looking at this as a freak accident that happened at the end, but we can't turn a blind eye to the fact that breakdown injuries do occur at a pretty high rate. But I just want to make sure we understand that the industry does have a moral conscience. There are a lot of things being done on a routine basis to help these things along. Medical research is one of them. That was mentioned by your caller. And mm-hmm. if you look at it, the Grayson Jockey Club Research Foundation is formed, and it's highly supported by, you know, Mr. Squires and others in the racing industry like that, so that there's a lot of good medical research that's done every year. In fact, they even funded a grant this year.
Is there a breeding problem, Dr. Stick? Is there a problem with the way thoroughbreds are being bred? Are we putting too much muscle and weight on top of what champagne glass stem legs, I think Sally Jenkins wrote?
Yes, I guess I disagree with the fact that, you know, we're selecting for small limbs. That definitely isn't true. We know when we go, you know, in the sale ring and look at these horses, they select for large bone in those horses without a doubt. However, we are breeding them for them to be bigger, faster at an earlier age. And there's no two ways about that, that early speed is what pays.
Do you see an ethical problem as a vet with racing too young? And is racing too young the norm?
Racing young is a norm in the United States. It's the way the financial incentives are set up. And I think Dr. Bramley said it best when he talked about the fact we need to have financial incentives for horses that race as older horses.
The vet
right
at
now,
Churchill Downs, yeah.
The early ones.
Mm-hmm. And finally, what about Wayne Pacelli with the Humane Society uses the phrase rampant use of drugs. Do you agree? Is that going on? Do you see it?
No, that is regulated at the state level, but it is regulated and highly regulated. Positive tests, the drugs that are used to reduce inflammation are very easily detected, and levels, they can tell when you gave the drug last. And so it's very difficult for people to over-medicate or use drugs to cover up pain like that.
But I read almost everywhere that the United States uses drugs more than Europe does. Now, is that the case? And if so, why, John Stick?
They do it to get rid of the soreness. Any athlete who's in training will take anti-inflammatories. They'll take aspirin, Advil, other things like that. And the drugs that are used in horses are used the same way. They're given anti-inflammatory drugs to reduce the muscle soreness that they have and other things. Now, in young horses, can it cover up something? Well, it might.
Do you see problems in your rehabilitation center? Do you see problems resulting from, too young, from drug use, from breeding, John?
Well, in our rehabilitation program, of course, the horses are really running for their life when we finally get them. And so a lot of those problems have been ongoing for a while. You can't blame the drugs per se. Part of it is the sport.
And this is what I have to, Tom,
I have to
disagree strongly here. You know, horses should be taking in hay, oats, and water, and they should not be prescribed drugs on race day. The folks who are drugging, and this is well chronicled in the history of the horse racing industry, are staying one step ahead of the regulators, and the regulators are not looking around the next bend in terms of what cocktails are being used to get injured horses onto the track. Why don't we then have penalties for trainers and owners who enter infirm horses in races? I mean, we've got to get to the basics, and again, I think the point is the discussion that we've had today, while very evocative and very important, again, the range of discussion of folks within the industry is so narrow that we're just recycling these debates about drugs and early age racing, and the fundamentals are not being addressed by the industry. The industry will spend money on examination of issues, and we'll put study into this, and we'll discuss it, but again, it's not sticky. And we're not seeing changes that are resulting from these panels and these commissions.
Well, let's go right there. Jim Squires, you've been patiently waiting. What about the fundamentals here? Wayne Pacelli's kind of threatening Industry Clean Up Your Act, or Humane Society and others may really be on your case, and says fundamentals aren't being dealt with. You hear several put out on the table. What do you say, Jim?
Well, we hear a lot of talk. I mean, my plate is so full of misinformation that I don't know which part of it to deal with.
Dive in.
But I'll start to tell you that there are a very powerful forces at work inside the industry in an effort to do all of these things, particularly medical research, safer tracks. And there are a number of breeders who do not breed for the market. There is an economic problem in the market in that the market likes big horses early, and big early horses lead to big money. So that criticism is legitimate, and there are a lot of people in our industry who want to change that. The one of the problems about the drugs is that most of the trainers do not want to use any kind of drug other than one that helps the horse's health. We don't have a plethora of trainers out here trying to cover up injuries so they can run a $10,000 claimer down the track. That happens, and there are bad apples in our business like there are everywhere else. Most of the drugs that we talk about are therapeutic and help horses recover. The most commonly used one, for example, is a bronchodilator, which helps a horse get rid of a respiratory problem, which are rampant in racetracks and on farms. They're big problems for us all.
How do you
change? So a horse can go 90 days, 120 days without racing because it can't get rid of a respiratory infection.
How do you change that big early horse problem, Jim? If the market is driving it, big early horses make the big money, you say, the industry wants to change it, but how do you do it?
I am saying to you there is a segment in the industry that likes big early horses.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Secretariat was a big early horse.
Mm-hmm.
There's no indication he was drugged in any way. So some big early horses are fine. It is when drugs are used to make fraudulent big early horses, make horses
grow faster.
Tom,
let me just say that.
Could you hang on just a moment, Wayne?
Pardon?
Please. I just wanted to hear you out on that. You're saying earlier than they should. That is the point. What do you mean when you say a fraudulent?
Well, every horse grows at a different rate. Some horses grow fast. Some horses grow slow. We're talking about genetics here and breeding. And we talk about overbreeding, and some people interpret that to mean too many horses. And Sally Jenkins determines it to mean we're breeding horses with hourglass legs.
Mm-hmm.
Overbreeding is too many horses. there are people who think they are doing the right thing by making their horse grow and look beautiful and get bigger faster.
Quick.
Mm-hmm. That they don't understand that they're probably growing a horse with a bone that's too fragile and not well formed enough to hold up under the training they're going to give it. So there are some things we could stop doing. Mm. We can stop running two-year-olds down the track in 10 seconds because that is, people who want to do that, the market buys horses that go down the track a furlong in 10 seconds mm-hmm. or 2 furlongs in 21 seconds. That is unnatural for a horse. So we ought to stop that. That's one of the legitimate criticisms. We ought to quit giving growth hormones and steroids to make horses appear to be different than they naturally are. Mm-hmm. That's a legitimate criticism.
Mm-hmm.
The criticism that no one cares or that no one is trying to reform the industry or that there's no money being put into drug testing.
But, Jim, no one said that.
That's all wrong.
Wayne, I will hear you out. I want to take a caller right here, if I may, from Williamsburg, Virginia. Maria, you're on the air.
Hey, I've raised grandchildren of secretariats, and I can tell you that even at 6 years of age, they are still adding muscle growth and still continuing to grow. So running three-year-olds is one thing. But the other thing that seems to be interesting to me is that the discussion about early speed versus stability, that seems, secretariat seems to be the horse that tells that that is not true because he still, to my knowledge, has the Derby record. And so he was stable, so stable that I don't believe he ever missed a race at all because of a lame day. So you can breed for stability and speed. He's the proof of that. And
Maria, do you think the industry is serious about doing that, about cleaning up the edges here?
I don't think they're looking at it correctly. I think that you have to breed first for stability, and then the horse will have speed. There are secretariats out there.
Maria, our time is so short, but I thank you for your call. Wayne Pacelli, a last thought from you here.
Thank you. You know, Jim said that there were, you know, so much misinformation, and then he didn't say that there was anything that I had said that was wrong. You know, I never said that the industry doesn't put money in. I said the range of action is too limited and that we're not seeing these reforms. We're seeing the early age racing debate has been going on forever. Why doesn't the industry settle it? And this issue of drugs, I'd refer people to ESPN.com. Jeremy Plonk, who's a racing writer, talked about Derby drugs just yesterday, a great column on it. There are basic issues that the industry must address. We don't want to take the responsibility of really digging into this and investigating. We would want the industry to handle it, but we've got so many problems that are not getting fully addressed.
Wayne Pacelli with the Humane Society in Washington, thank you very much for joining us. And John Stick in East Lansing, Michigan, at the Michigan State University Veterinary Teaching Hospital, thanks to you both for being with us. Jim Squires, last word goes to you here. How do you see this industry evolving? Lots of passion
weekend. The biggest problem the industry has overcoming its internal conflicts and arriving at uniform rules and regulations and then funding the regulation. Does no good to have a regulation if the regulating industry or operative in Florida doesn't have the money or the horse racing authority in Kentucky doesn't have the money. We tend to create regulating groups and then not give them any money or any ability to enforce the rules.
Well, we do
have a problem with uniform regulations. So you talk about, well, why can a horse do something in Florida? Well, you can give them 24 hours before a race in Louisiana.
Jim Squires, we're out of time with that, and I'm sorry for it, but we'll do it again. Thanks for joining us, Jim Squires from Kentucky. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.